Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast covers everything tech. The hottest mobile phones, tablets, games. We review it, rate it, test it. Whether you're Microsoft or Apple, Android or iPhone, we'll give it to you
again and again.
Black and white. The Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast.
Welcome to Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Charney.
And I'm your co-host, Shane Northrup.
Today we're going to be talking about Google's self-driving car fender bender. Is Twitter up for sale? Ubisoft's latest video game, Watch Dogs 2. BBC making holographic television, and more.
So to get us all started off, we're going to talk a little bit about a Google self-driving car was involved in a crash in Mount View, California on Friday. So what had happened was, according to police, once the vehicle went on a green light, another driver ran a red light and crashed into the Google car. Luckily, nobody was hurt in the accident. Google themselves had to say the following statement, and I quote, "A Google vehicle was traveling northbound on Phyllis Avenue in Mountain View, where a car heading westbound on El Camino ran a red light and collided with the right side of our vehicle. Our light was green for at least 6 seconds before the car entered the intersection. Thousands of crashes has happened every day in U.S. roads, and red light running is the leading cause of urban crashes in the U.S. Human error plays a role in 94% of these crashes, which is why we're developing fully self-driving technology to make our roads safer," end quote.
Now, the most interesting thing about this is so far every crash I've heard of the Google cars having is 100% everybody else's fault, including one of the drivers, I think, that took over control of the self-driving car. Now, I think the drawback right now, say if you're going to have a car that's fully automated versus me who's not, is that automated car has to figure out how to detect that other car.
Yes.
And I think this is the one thing that I don't know if it's good. But it's good the fact accidents happen as long as nobody's unsafe. So this actually helps them? I don't know. I mean, what do you think, Shay?
According to the report, there was a Google employee in the car who took over its operation once it noticed the other car kept driving. So he slammed on the brakes. So I'm wondering if the Google car just kept going, if there would have even been a crash.
Oh, no, I agree. And this is one of the things I think driving it in real world conditions is a good thing is if it kept going, would it be able to? Was it able to detect the car coming? Does it have sonar? I mean, how does it detect an oncoming car, or is it only forward focused?
Well, I know that they have a 360 camera mounted to the top of these cars. So I think that might have something to do with it. I don't know if the car itself can stop. Now, one of the things that I think is really interesting, well, I think it's cool that the drivers can take control back over control, which is a nice feature.
See, I don't know. I know for me personally, if I decided to buy one of these cars, that would have to be an option. I am never going to completely surrender my life over to some machine. I've seen too many bad things happen in movies.
Right. Well, not just that. I think a little bit, a part of me likes to think that some of these crashes, because they're all the other driver's fault, are staged to make Google self-driving cars look better.
That's like, hilarious.
Look, it's people's fault. If all of the cars were self-driving, there would be no problems.
That's awesome. Matter of fact, there's a Japanese anime called X Driver that actually has a similar feel to this. Now, the story of this cartoon, this anime, is everybody's cars are self-driving, but for some reason, once in a while, these cars go haywire. Now, these X-drivers are the only people who are allowed to drive gasoline cars because they have the skill and the ability to drive them safely, and they stop all the automated cars.
Right.
So that's another question. Will they go rogue? I mean, I can totally see somebody hacking into them if I'm going to put my tinfoil hat on and saying, taking out Bob, who never gave back his lawnmower.
Or I don't know. There's always this, like, I always hear conspiracy theorists saying, well, they're going to take you to the political gulags. The Democratic Party is going to find a way to take all of their political prisons straight to prison.
Even I think that's a bit of a stretch.
And oh, yeah.
I've definitely commuted for most of my life, and I'd love the idea that, you know, my car's driving me to work and I can get an extra couple of minutes of sleep. To me, that's a dream. I don't know. I mean, what do you guys think of it? Is this something you guys are interested? Do you want it? I mean, I think it's a pretty amazing piece of technology, and it's definitely the future.
I think it's interesting that, like, every time we hear about a self-driving car crashing, it's usually the user's fault.
Yeah.
Even with Tesla.
Totally. And Tesla, Tesla's had some, how do I describe it, some horrific accidents with their automated system. There's been people who, unfortunately, have died because of user error. And so far, Google has been really lucky. There's been nothing tragic.
Right. Well, and I know, isn't Uber doing some self-driving stuff too right now?
I think that's something they want to do in the future. And that's another thing. I mean, how do you do that? I mean, is this cars people rent? Do they buy? There's a myriad of questions to me, not only how Uber's going to do it, but what do we do for self-driving cars? So I guess if you want to do a little prognostication, say in 10 years from now, everybody has a self-driving car. Do you still have to learn how to drive a manual car? Is that going to be a requirement? Or are we going to have a bunch of people who don't only not know how to drive a normal car, that if something happened, they wouldn't know to push the slanty pedal?
Right.
I mean, how do you do that? How do you legislate that? And I think this is one of the things in the next 10, 20 years we're going to have to work on. Mm-hmm. I mean, so what do you think, Shay?
I don't know. I've kind of already said in previous episodes how I feel about self-driving cars. I don't think the technology has been perfected enough yet, but we probably will see it in our lifetime being a common thing.
I don't know. I'm a little bit of a motorhead. I love the smell of gasoline. There's batteries just don't have the same. And I think that's what's going to happen, is I think it's going to be an automated electric vehicle, because obviously I think, you know, with pollution in the air, I think it's the future.
Sure.
Now, we're going to switch off a little bit to social media, and Twitter might be for sale. No, all the articles I've read so far are talking about Salesforce. And do you use Twitter at all?
I use Twitter occasionally when I'm looking at the GSMC Technology Podcast setup, mostly just to see if the fans are interacting with us and that sort of thing. But other than that, I don't really use Twitter too much unless I'm making some new film.
So I've used Twitter off and on every day for other things I do. And one of the benefits about Twitter is it's the fastest way to send out a short message.
Right.
And Twitter now is a publicly traded company. And to be completely honest, they haven't exactly done all that well. And the fact they might be, kind of asking for suitors is interesting, because you always hear, oh, Twitter's making a lot of money, or Twitter's doing great, because they're always in the news.
Right. They're always doing something.
Like WWE Wrestling uses that all the time. They're always, for lack of a better word, showing or pimping their Twitter account, which is social media, which is what you got to do to get interaction between fans. Wrestlers have it. Celebrities have it. So it's a great way for people to stay in contact. Now, a lot of this stuff I've been reading is talking about people, instead of wanting the platform, they want the fire hose. They want all the data. They want Ma and Pa Kettle's Twitter comments. And honestly, that's one of the things Google does with their search engine. Their search engine is a marketing tool more than it is a search engine. And I'm thinking this is why people like Salesforce want it.
It's actually a little scary if you think about it.
Well, yeah, like, for example, Facebook knows more about you than you do. I mean, they know what you're having for breakfast, what you had for breakfast, what you had for lunch, how much you really hate your boyfriend or girlfriend because of the argument. They know when you checked into the movies and how often you do it. Like, for example, I generally see a couple of movies a month, no theater.
I guess I just don't give Facebook that much information.
Well, I actually think I'm the standard Facebook user. You know, I have a lot of friends, and it's just between stuff I do, whether it's the amazing podcast you're listening to now or the other things I'm doing, I'm always kind of up to date in social media and what's the trends. Now, according to everything I've read, Salesforce has all the access to Twitter's content now. They have the fire hose, as they call it. But if Salesforce buys it, they can stop everybody else from having access to it.
Right.
So it's a monopoly on Twitter data. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I just don't get it. I don't really get Twitter. Don't completely understand why anybody wants it besides the basic information, you know?
I don't know. Maybe Salesforce can convince Microsoft to bring back Tay.
Free Tay.
Yeah, I think that would be kind of cool. Other than that, I think the fact that Twitter's getting all these suitors is a little scary just for everyone's personal content and that sort of thing.
Now, everything I've read, there's Google, there's Microsoft, Verizon. Heck, you could even do even foreign, like Chinese companies. And there's a lot of people who could use this platform to benefit them. But I don't know. See, one of the best things about Twitter, and this is a tad bit of a tangent, is this is one of the reasons we were able to hear about what was happening in some of the Middle Eastern countries is because people were tweeting it. You don't hear, like, say if another 9/11 happens, you know where you're going to hear about it first would be Twitter and social media.
Well, and it looks like sports are starting to come to Twitter. I know Twitter's been talking about...
They've been doing the NFL, right?
NFL, yeah.
So, I don't know. We're definitely going to have to stay up to date in what happens to this because I think this is going to be something that's definitely going to be an interesting change to Twitter.
So we are coming up on a break. When we get back, we're going to talk to you guys a little bit about some Star Wars hologram technology. We're also going to talk to you guys about Watchdog 2. So stick around.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be. Visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
So it looks like BBC is testing a holographic television inspired by Star Wars. It's actually kind of funny how they're doing this because it sounds kind of DIY and a little bit janky, but what they used and the technologies are quite simple. So BBC took a large flat screen television from their office, worked with a plastic cutter to create a simple acrylic pyramid shape. By placing the pyramid on top of the screen, BBC recreated an old Victorian theater trick known as the pepper ghost effect, which projects on the screen image into the pyramid.
So what's funny about this is there's actually DIY instructions how to do something similar with jewel cases for
right.
CDs. Disney uses this effect. It's an old theater trick and film trick, actually.
And so I don't know if you've seen the footage from this, but it actually looks pretty cool. Like it does look like the old Princess Leia hologram. So what they did was they took they had a visual effects company, MDH Hologram, tweak some of the iconic archive footage and bring it to life in that acrylic pyramid. So the way it's set up is you've got the TV and it's facing down, and then you've got the pyramid, and then the image is broadcasted up onto the pyramid, as well as some images on the actual TV itself. It's actually really cool looking.
Now, this was something that you and I were talking about a little bit before we started the show, and you had an interesting comment, Vars. You know, you didn't think this was going to stay around or that most people wouldn't buy this.
I don't think people would buy this, but I think it would be kind of like a cool piece in, like, say, you've got it set up in a sports bar, and there's the table. And you've got the little hologram pyramid in the middle of the table so you could watch the basketball game while you're drinking your beer or, you know, like the fight, you know, in kind of a hologrammy type way. So that way not everybody's looking at the TV.
See, the first thing that came to mind was radio. When radio came around, it changed the way family did things. And
right.
Then it really changed when the introduction of pictures and television. Now, it would take a giant change in my mind for this type of viewing to become popular in a family setting. I do think it would be nearly impossible because for at least almost the last 100 years, if not approximately about 100 years, everybody has been facing one direction to watch
right.
a TV. The other interesting thing to me is you're going to also have to change the way films are made. If you want a 360-degree picture, you're going to have cameras and multiple cameras and able to do that without having to have some sort of algorithm or FX company to split everything up like that.
Right. Well, I think it actually would be kind of cool for, like, fighting games. Like, if they did kind of like a Street Fighter type thing with this, I think that would be really cool.
Mortal Kombat, Hologram Edition.
Now, what I also think would be really cool is, you know, Djeric? Hologram game that's played in A New Hope, Star Wars?
Oh, yeah.
So they have like that Star Wars hologram game where R2-D2 starts beating Chewbacca and Chewbacca gets mad. I think that would be really cool to see on this TV, like if you could play that game.
I definitely think this is not going to catch on in the home environment. Not only that, I do think it would be expensive for quite a while.
And right.
As much as I hate to say it, I think Shay's right. This is going to be a niche experience, probably something within a bar.
Well, I don't think it would be super expensive if they mass produced it because, again, it is using very simple technology.
No, it's using simple technology, but I have a feeling they're going to be just doing something different. I'm thinking the way they're doing it now is a beta test. I'm kind of thinking.
Yeah, sure. Well, and it's BBC. Like, it's not like it's a major company. They just kind of built it.
Well, see, I would actually disagree. BBC,
BBC is a huge company, but they're not like a hardware manufacturer.
No, they're not. They're definitely. The other thing is BBC is also British, is actually owned by British citizens. It's actually, if I remember correctly, it gets money from taxes and a few other things.
It's kind of like PBS a little bit.
Yeah, it's like PBS's older brother. I really love to see it. I think video games, now, if this was in an arcade back in my day, I'd be sitting and playing games all day long because there were a couple of different video games back in the day that you were hologram-esque.
Yeah, well, and a lot of them were like the whole top-down experience too. Like I know Pac-Man and stuff like that had the screen facing
There was a game, was it Time Bandits? There was something that literally was a hologram or very esque. It was a white cabinet. And if any of you guys actually know what I'm talking about, please let me know because I've been trying to remember for the last decade. But it was one of my all-time favorite games. And now we're going to switch things up a little bit, talk about video games. Is Ubisoft's latest Watch Dogs 2 trailer was released. Now, if anybody has ever played Watch Dogs, you'll know what I'm talking about. If not, let me describe it a little bit. Watch Dog is basically about hackers. Now, hackers control this city in this world in the game. Everything runs off a citywide OS, and the hackers are able to hack into it. Because of, obviously, security flaws.
Right.
Now, the coolest, and I mean the coolest thing about this, the first game, is a companion app for your cell phone. Now, what you would do is you'd sign into it using your login you actually created for the game. And then you'd be able to be the cops and stopping people from getting to their goal. So you'd actually have to, it would be like a purple square or something in game. You click that, and you'd actually be doing PvP.
Right.
That to me was the coolest thing, is having a companion app. Now, I'm hoping when this comes out, they kick that into high gear, because to me, having two ways of playing a single game is revolutionary. Now, Microsoft, Xbox, and Sony's PlayStation both have the ability to do this.
Well, and this isn't anything new either. Fallout 4 has a similar companion app for the Pip-Boy.
Yeah. See, the issue I have with that was nowhere near the level of what Watch Dogs did. I mean,
okay, sure. Like, I never actually played Watch Dogs.
Like Fallout 4, for example, you could actually interact with it a little. You could change your firearms. It allowed you to do stuff. My friend and I actually used it so we could compare where we are in the game.
Right.
You could play actually games in Pip-Boy. In Fallout 4, you could find video games, and you're able to actually play it out on your iPad and your phone. And this one, you were playing versus actual people, having real-world interactions. You would raise security barriers to crash the car. You were airplanes, and it was really revolutionary. And it was actually fairly well done. Now, to me, it wasn't the most exciting way to do it.
Right. Well, from what I understand, I remember when that game came out, everyone was really excited and people were playing it for a minute. And then now I don't know a single person that still plays Watch Dogs.
Now, here in my opinion, I've been a gamer pretty much my whole life. The game was a little bit of a letdown. If I remember correctly, it was using the GTA engine. I don't like single stick driving. The gameplay was a tad bit on the generic side.
I heard like the gunplay was pretty bad.
The gunplay was, I'll admit, it was pretty bad. Now, there were some major shortcomings to this game. It was a Gen 1 idea, in my opinion. I don't know. I think the last game took place in Chicago. This one's in San Francisco. I'm hoping they change it a little bit now.
I like the San Francisco backdrop a little bit better. But this, again, feels like it would be a much, much better... I don't know. I feel like this would be a better movie than an actual
game. See, I love, absolutely love the idea of video games becoming movies, but I don't even know if this would be a good movie. The story on this game was kind of thin.
Yeah, you've got a huge, Google-type tycoon. Looks just like the guy from... looks just like the guy from Ex Machina, honestly.
Now, this will be available on PCs, I'm assuming PlayStation. Now, I'm really looking forward to seeing how the second, what do you call it, the companion app? I'm looking forward to see how the companion app plays around with it. Now, if it could be multi-platform, I think it'd be better.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I'd just be curious. Now, a lot of video games now are actually coming with deluxe editions. There'll be a $70 in deluxe edition that will come with the base game, two personalization packs, dress up for the main character in this guy. It's named Marcus, his car and drone, and other things. The $100 gold edition will be including the deluxe package plus season pass, which will provide all the DLC. So we'll be interesting. I do recommend, if you can afford at least the season pass, I always recommend getting it if you enjoy the game, because it will actually save you money in the long run.
Yeah, I can't say that I've ever done that. I usually have to see if I like the game before I get a season pass. What I'll usually do is I'll wait for the extended content to go on sale.
I almost always get it off the bat. Now, there's been a few times where that actually I regretted doing it, but I almost always buy the season pass. I recommend it, but make sure you play the game first. Now, we're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about second screen experiences.
Are you looking for help for your fantasy football team? Check out the GSMC Fantasy Football Podcast. Get today's best advice on who to start, who to sit, even who you should draft. From sleeper picks to red-hot lineups, they got it all covered for you. That's gsmcpodcast.com/fantasy-football-podcast. We'll cover traditional leagues, dynasty, PPR, even IDP leagues. When you need fantasy help, there's just one show to hit up. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
And now what I mean by second screen experiences, like I talked in the last segment, was Watch Dogs having a app that you could play the game with. The Fallout 4 had it. And what do you think about second screen experiences? Do you think movies should have it, TV? I mean, what do you think?
A lot of movies and TV do have second screen experiences. Like, I know a lot of networks like ABC and stuff like that, AMC. Use a second screen experience so that way there's kind of a forum going on while you're watching the show. So, like, you'll be watching Walking Dead and you can be talking about Walking Dead with people who like Walking Dead. I know Dexter did it a little bit at their season finale. The second screen concept has been around for a little bit.
Now, you want to talk about that. There's been, I remember, like, when I was a kid, there was actually a device you could buy, roughly looked like a giant PlayStation Vita.
Right.
And it would actually use signals that were sent through the TV that would allow you to communicate, interact, win prizes. The idea of it's been around for a long time, but see, what I'm thinking of now, put on your imagination hats, ladies and gentlemen. I'm thinking about, say, if you're watching NCIS and you can actually help the characters on the screen. I don't exactly know how this would go along, but this would be cool if you could interact with the show and a game type of second-hand experiences. That it would enhance
that's a little weird.
What you're watching. I don't know if it would actually work, but I think it would be cool if you could somehow get that to work.
Are you familiar with the app Twitch?
A little bit, yeah.
So Twitch is basically you watch people play video games, you can watch movies with people, and then there's a whole sidebar that has all of these
rooms, chatting, chatters.
Yeah, basically it's a chat room. And so you're watching something and you can interact with it and you can use, you know, I know it mostly works on your computer, but people do it with their Xbox, and then you can have your phone open with the Twitch app and put in the little chat.
Okay.
So you'll see things like always pop up on the screen. Like I remember last Halloween, Twitch was doing a marathon of Bob Ross. And so I went to a couple parties and everything. But when I came home, my roommate Chris was watching Bob Ross. So we watched Bob Ross on Twitch, and it was hilarious. All the comments, like, bring back Steve, oh no, ruined, and all the little Bob Ross emojis that would pop up on the screen.
See, I love secondhand experiences. I even have a thought about, you know, say if you're playing, like you're playing a game and your roommate wants to play and there's only a single player. Now imagine if somehow he could interact with you as a second screen experience. So say example, he would be, how could I say it? I've been playing a game called Deus Ex a lot lately. And in this game, there's a guy that you hear on the info link and there are people who are hackers and all stuff like that. Now imagine if he was hacking while you're playing the game, if he was helping you.
Right.
See, that's what I really want. Now granted, not everybody has the type of friends and the time, but it's such a rich idea. I think it would work great. I think you could pull it off.
That would be kind of fun. I think the second screen experience with video games is a hit and miss thing.
Oh,
I
yes.
know with
yes,
the Fallout
yes.
second screen thing. It's really not fun to switch in between your phone and a controller.
You know, the funniest thing is I was actually using my iPad. Now, I have this stand I bought for my iPad years ago. And so what I would do is actually set it on my coffee table while I was playing. And so I was doing inventory management while I was playing. And that worked fine for me.
Well, that's kind of cool.
But you're right. It's not the most convenient thing.
Right.
It does kind of ruin the flow of the game, which to me is important. I don't want to pause, do this, pause, do that. So you'd have to figure out how to make it a more dynamic experience. Now, have you ever wanted to say, hey, Siri, am I drunk? And my apologies about doing that. Now, a California university at San Diego reported they have developed a flexible, wearable, even, quote-unquote, attractive skin patch that detects blood alcohol in the wearer's sweat, then sends the results to a smartphone. The researchers made the patch from temporary tattoo embedded and flexible electronics. It works by delivering a small amount of porlocarpine. I can't pronounce anything, so I'm sorry. A drug that stimulates the secretion of sweat to the wearable skin using electrical current, a process called iontophoresis. I'm truly sorry. I'm not good at pronouncing things. The patch electrochemically accesses the sweat's alcohol content, and data is transmitted to your mobile device via Bluetooth connection. Now, this isn't the first device to do something like this. There are bands that you wear around your feet for people who are on house arrest, for example, and if they're not allowed to have alcohol, can actually detect that through the ankle bracelet.
Well, it always reminds me of the breathalyzers that sometimes they'll install in cars.
Oh, yeah, so interlocked.
So that way they can't drive unless they pass a breathalyzer test.
Now, see, the issue with this, the issue with those, for example, is you can have somebody blowing it. This device, for example, if this became more commonplace, was if it's actually encoded into the car, you couldn't actually bypass this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so for me, someone who's a little bit of a teetotaler, maybe drinks once a year, not really big, it is a little bit of a gimmick, but what do you think? Was this something that you would use? Do you know anybody who would use it?
I really don't know anybody who would use this.
Now, for me,
unless it was mandatory.
You see, yeah, for me, I'm always thinking about use cases for things. And as a technology point, I think this is kind of neat. I do think wearable technology like this is the future, whether it's good or bad. I totally see this being more an everyday life thing. I do like the fact that it's just basically a temporary tattoo.
Yeah, that is kind of cool.
Now, one question would be, can they use this for other things? Would they be able to use this for diabetics, for example? Can you detect blood sugar levels through sweat?
Now, that is a good use case for this. If you could be testing blood glucose through a wearable tattoo instead of, you know, pricking your finger, that would be a much better solution. I feel like that would be a better use case for it than testing your blood alcohol level.
No, I completely agree, especially considering, you know, you, myself, and everybody we know knows somebody who's affected by diabetes. I think that would be a great use case. Now, there are a little bit more sci-fi-y use cases for this. I know there's a guy who embedded an RFID chip in his body and was going through doors and stuff like that, and it would detect it and unlock things.
I don't think this would set it off, though. It's just a tattoo.
I think it would depend on how you do it. Maybe a muscle movement, you know, something.
Right.
So this is definitely something that we're going to have to pay attention to.
Oh, I meant like it's not going to set off like alarms and stuff like that.
Oh, no. Actually, I wonder if it's made out of some sort of metal, even maybe a little bit of copper or something like that, it might actually set off magnetometers.
Maybe.
I don't know. It's definitely an interesting use case. I think, like we said before, I'd be more interested in seeing it for as medically more than anything.
Well, and even to just check your blood pressure or to check...
How would you do blood pressure, though, with a tattoo?
I'm sure they could figure something out.
Hmm.
Like blood pressure or maybe even like blood sugar level. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No. Yeah. It's pretty much like a movement called Quantify Self. It's one of the reasons they have smartwatches, Fitbit, stuff like that. Now, if they could have Fitbit that's a temporary tattoo, you know, say you buy a box of 100, I'd be interested in that. Something that it's not in some sort of accoutrement to your body. It uses your body's old electrochemical or whatever you do to actually power it.
How much do you think this technology is going to be for people who do want to test their blood alcohol level? Like, I think this would be fun, like, once.
I'm thinking if it actually became usable, at first, I would not be surprised if it was in the couple $100 range. And the other thing is, how long would it be useful? So I could totally see you'd have to get 4 in a pack for a month.
Yeah.
And you'd probably have to be careful where you put it, you know, showering type of thing. So I could see it being fairly hefty, at least initial steep price.
Right.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, we have unfortunately come to an end of another great show. So Shay and I want you to do us a favor. Go to facebook.com/GSMC Technology Podcast. And this is episode 34. Now, is there a story you'd love to know or spin on? Do you have any questions or is there anything we can answer for you regarding today's topics? Please let us know. The other thing we want you to go to is gsmcpodcast.com. Click on Technology Podcast and subscribe. You can find us everywhere and anywhere throughout the interwebs. Also, go to our Twitter page at GSMC Technology. And for Shay and myself, thank you for listening.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. From movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.